Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the show tonight. I see we have a couple of friends out in the chat room, hopefully some friends out in the airwaves. I want to remind you, if you like Brain Injury Radio on your program page, on the upper left corner, under the program picture, there's a little button that says follow. If you hit the follow button, you will be emailed before each program, so you'll have a friendly reminder of the program coming up. You might also see, if you've logged in, a couple of photographs as they scroll across the program page, and one of those is me with a monkey on my back. I noticed I used that photo the first time when our guest was an attorney who was talking about Social Security disability. And that certainly gives a lot of us a monkey on our back. But other things that put a monkey on our back we've talked about in the recovery show, some of those being, well, things we've talked about, depression, the stages of grief, some topics like that. There's a couple different things that I want to talk about tonight, and one of them was precipitated by a conversation I had with a family member today. And then, of course, I welcome you guys to call in as well. One of the things I wanted to briefly talk about, and I'm not going to go back through the stages of grief. Actually, tonight we're going to talk about celebrating life. But in doing that, there's some things that we have to knock out of the way first, particularly when we've had a profound life change such as that happens with a traumatic brain injury. And so denial, we were talking about this on someone else's show the other night, so I did a little bit of studying today, and it reminded me back to my Psych 101 course, and some of you will remember this. A lot of us don't have huge problems with our long-term memory. It's our short-term memory. We can tell you all the words from a favorite song in the 70s or 80s, but we can't tell you what we had for lunch today. But in any case, what it says here is denial is probably one of the best-known defense mechanisms used often to describe situations in which people seem unable to face reality or admit an obvious truth. Denial is an outright refusal to admit or recognize that something has occurred or is currently occurring. People often deny that they have a problem, while victims of traumatic events may deny that the event ever even occurred. Denial functions to protect the ego from things that the individual cannot cope with. While this may save us from anxiety or pain, denial also requires a substantial investment of energy. Because of this, other defenses are also used to keep these unacceptable feelings from consciousness. Another definition of denial is the refusal to acknowledge the existence or severity of unpleasant external realities or internal thoughts or feelings. Now, I think I'll stop there for just a moment and talk a little bit about that. I know, you know, a couple of us in the chat room, and I'm not going to make this our conversation tonight either, but, you know, a couple of us have recently lost pets or are in the process of having sick pets. It took me back this, at least this last few weeks that I've been through, when it talks about refusal to acknowledge the existence or severity of unpleasant external realities. You know, right after I had my brain trauma, it was such a huge concept for me to be able to, no pun intended, wrap my head around the changes, the fact that sometimes when I would go to, I remember the first time I was in the grocery store checkout line, and it was before debit cards, I went to write a check for my groceries. I wrote the name of the store, I wrote the amount, and I went to sign my name, and my hand froze. I couldn't remember for the life of me how to sign my name. And I kind of was looking down. I was getting agitated. I could feel my blood pressure going up and my heart start to race as I looked up and noticed the people behind me in line and the checkout gal looking at me like, what the heck's going on? You know, you're just signing your name there. It was like I had drawn a blank. And that kind of embarrassment, somebody, you know, another situation back then, well, could be now for that matter, I might be at a gathering and get introduced to someone and 2 minutes later I can't remember what their name was. When I first had my brain trauma in that first year when I was, these things were just popping up, like living in the world of post-it notes, the not being able to remember, you know, people's names, the sensory overload I would get if there were too many noises or concepts or things to learn coming at me all at the same time. I wanted to deny that those were after effects from my brain injury. I didn't want to think that would be a change that I was going to have to live with for the rest of my life. And of course, when I went to the doctor in the first year for those couple follow-up visits, he assured me that with time, most of those things would resolve, and kind of left it at that. And because I wanted to deny the possibility that those might be permanent after effects, I was more than willing to trust, listen to the doctor, and not very patient about waiting for me to change back to what I was before, to be able to remember those names, to not get hand freeze when I go to sign my name, to not feel sensory overload or get degrees of anxiety over what seems like a silly thing at the time that wouldn't have bothered me before, that might cause me to burst out into tears in public. I wanted to deny that those would be situations that I might have to deal with for the rest of my life. The reason why I bring up this subject tonight is I was visiting with a family member today who has Parkinson's, and if that isn't bad enough, you know, going through that same process that all of us have been through, you know, obviously he's been through that process upon his diagnosis and as his health has shifted. Well, now in the meantime, a new thing has come up, and it's damage to a nerve, like a nerve in the back between, I think it's the L4 and the L5. And he's tried a number of different things, like a lot of us do. I know particularly a lot of aneurysm survivors or any of the audience out there who has had any kind of traumatic surgery, be it brain surgery or other types of surgery. I see we have one of our fellow hosts out there in the chat room who recently got through with surgery. We'd like to think that there's a magic pill or a magic book or a magic surgery or a magic treatment that'll be like fairy dust and take the pain away and change us back to who we were before, that the condition will go away. And so often that's not the case. For me, I had nerve damage in my face after my jaw area and forehead area after my craniotomy. A number of years after that, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia, and I realized I had been living with chronic pain every day of my life since I had that brain surgery, and some days that would weigh very heavily, and I did go through those stages of grief for the loss of my old self, and was trying to figure out who this new self was going to be, and if I even had the energy to figure that out after dealing with at the same time, you guys, call in. In any case, I just wasn't able to quite function the same, and that took some getting used to. But in any case, what I had to decide, each time I went in for a treatment, whether it was acupuncture, and in recovery, you know, we often, there's not just one magic bullet that's fired. We try a lot of different things. I tried cranial sacral work, massage, acupuncture, acupressure, physical therapy. Did I say a number of different kinds of medications, meditations, prayer, everything from some of the more invasive things to some of the lighter things. And some helped sometimes, but nothing was ever that magic bullet that took it away. And so at one time, and I talk about, I kind of stole it from Craig, the three A's, and that's the awareness of our situation, the acceptance of our situation, and then taking action in our situation. And a lot of times what I was reading in there about denial, it said that it takes a lot of energy to stay in that place, that place where we're not accepting reality for what it is, and that it can really unburden, at least it did for me, even though I didn't like my new reality, certainly, the fact that I didn't have to fight that it was in fact my new reality anymore really took a load off my shoulders and freed up some energy. And so what did I do with that energy? Well, I wanted to take a look at my life, and if I couldn't go backwards and live the life that I had lived before, I wanted to, well, get through the day in the beginning, just that 24 hours. But I also wanted to think about what I would do with my life in the future. And I've seen some of us talk in the chat room about, you know, wanting to know why we were spared, or, you know, why we lived through these traumatic brain injuries and what our purpose is. I used to think that deep, and I stopped, because I feel like I'm never going to know the answer to that until I finally do cross over to the other side, and then I'll know unequivocally what that purpose was. In the meantime, I just try to pay attention, keep my mind open, watch for opportunities, listen to other people, and my path is revealed to me. There's a lot of times things like this program, for example. There was a group of dominoes in my life. I was too busy because a lot of things going on in my life to tell my story. I suffered some losses that cleared off my desk. It enabled me to have the time this time last year to write a book about my story. And from there, I met all of you. I got introduced to internet radio, which this time last year, I didn't know that internet radio or Skype existed, and have gone on to not only guest on the radio show, but to host a radio show. And no, Jennifer, luck doesn't have anything to do with it. God has a lot to do with it. Fate has a lot to do with it, I guess. I didn't make the decision to keep living. When I had my near-death experience in that time, I wanted to cross over. So there was nothing about my traumatic brain injury, nothing about the fact that I'm sitting here alive in this chair today, nothing about any of that that I had any choice in. The only thing I had a choice about, and it had nothing to do with luck, it had to do with a lot of hard determination, and that was how I was going to react to the things that were happening to me that I didn't like. I'll give another example. I've got another friend who's been having some physical problems, and they could turn out to be very serious problems. And she's not leaving the house. She's frozen with the fear. I understand that. Frozen with the anger. Staying in the house. Not going out. Kind of sitting on the sidelines. And I know there was a time that I might have been prone to do that as well. Because every time I got a headache or every time I would be out in the bright sun and I would feel that piercing pain in my head, I'd have the fear that I was going to have a replay of one of the most horrific incidences of my life. Somehow I thought if I just stayed home and didn't move, I would be safe. And I realized that I was given the gift of my life back and that it was incumbent on me to live it since I was given that gift, and that since it wasn't any of my doing, that there was some purpose in me being given my life back, my life being spared, and it sure as heck wasn't to spend my life in depression all the time, never come out of the house, and not actually engage in life. One of our hosts in the chat room, and I'm gonna open the lines in just one moment for area code 585, thank you for holding for me. One of the things Matt would say is not watching the game from the sidelines, but actually getting out on the field and playing, whether that's shooting a hoop or swinging the bat. It's actually taking the action, making the movement to live our lives in whatever state our life is left in, and not to be too discouraged that we can't live the life we thought we were going to live or the life that we were living before, but that we will have purpose and an adventure before us, discovering our new life, our new persona, and how we can apply that to have a life ourselves that's happy, joyous, and free, as well as a life dedicated to service and helping others. So I'm going to take a break one moment for a caller, and then we'll go back to talking. So, let's see. Well, we might be anyway. Okay, area code 585, are you with me? Who do we have?
That's fantastic, Frank.
Fantastic, Frank. How are you tonight?
Fantastic.
Why did I know that was coming?
I'm not fantastic. you have to put a gun to my head and shoot me because that means I'm not able to control my instinct.
So when you were starting to write and do radio, you've been at the radio for quite a while. I know you've told me before that you didn't go through the grief process that you know of, and that a few of the things that I talk about on the recovery show, you didn't experience, mostly because you were so young at the time you had your episode, so you didn't, you know, you didn't have a fair mirror of comparison because your reality was established at a pretty young age. You know, some of us who are a little bit older when that shift was making really had a more dramatic, you know, mirror image of what we were before or what we thought we were and where we were headed. And in some ways, you know, there's two sides of every coin, you know. In some ways, you may have been...
I interrupt you, Kim?
Yeah.
I was 30 when this happened to me. I wasn't as young as you think I was. I was 30. I did have some depression days because my wife was leaving me. I had to file a divorce. I had to file bankruptcy. I lost my job at Eastman Coal Company. I went for 15 or 20 years lost. And I can't remember if I ever got depressed, though. I got down. I used to write these songs about love lost, and I think that was before I got trapped in a fire. So there was a part of me that wasn't as functional as you want, as I am right now. But any grief. Although I did mourn the loss of my wife and the business, but that was something I can't remember. That's one of the great things about your traumatic brain injury. You can't remember certain stuff. At least that's for me.
Right, right. Well, it does. Time has a way of dulling some of that, too. But I think you hit upon it. You know, you had the sadness and the depression about the losses. And I think, you know, not everybody goes through... It was just one person's theory who made up those five stages of grief. You know, I don't think that we all necessarily go through all five stages. We certainly don't process things at the same rate, even ourselves. You know, some situations take longer to process than others.
One thing I want to teach people is that if I have to go back and revisit this past, I could be very depressed over trying to remember how much my wife hurt me, how it hurt me to go through these sessions with a therapist before I got my head injury, how much I went through therapy for a week on end, how depressing that was to go through that. But, you know, as you try and relive the past, it becomes back to you. And so one of the things that I don't want to talk about much is what kind of pain I went through. Does that make
right.
sense?
Yeah, it does make sense because each time we do that, once we've gotten through
yes.
the situation, I think we can use it as a point of reference. But
yes.
to dwell there or to stare backwards just causes us to relive the same grief that we're powerless over again, and it just rents more space in our head that, frankly, we don't have room for. We need to use that for more positive things.
Yes, it's like when I talked about the dog, my dog, having put my dog down. We talked about that. That was Monday night, wasn't it? I can't remember what it was. I think it was Monday night or last Friday night, or it might have been Saturday. And that... The first time I had to put my dog down, it was terrible. And now I might have to put my new dog down. I've had it for 10 years, but I had to consider putting him down 2 years ago when he had a bad neck. And just to revisit that, it became the same thing. So So I don't revisit that until you have to do it again. And then this time it's going to be quicker. It's going to be when the vet says, yes, it's time. I'm not going to fight her as I did the first time. I fought her for 2 months, and that was too much time to go through that.
Right.
Have to learn mistakes, what I'm trying to say.
Well, it is hard. It's a hard thing to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard thing to go through. If you want to hang on for just a second, Frank, we have one more person here on the line. We have area code 484. Who do I have?
Jennifer Stokely.
Hello, Jennifer.
Survivor also.
I know you are.
You know me, and I know you.
That's
hello.
Right. Hello. Glad to have you here.
I just really love what you've been touching on tonight, and I was actually not even going to be getting on because I was usually only going to do it on Sundays when I had it planned because I have to schedule things with my mind the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
But this is so important to me. What I realize is the most important part of survival of when we first come to, even though we don't remember it, is for us. Everybody, if they remember music, they don't remember the words, but they remember the phrase, love is a battlefield.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers that. Well, for TBI, every TBI, life is a battlefield. Every step and every second of every day. We're immediately born, the minute we wake up, with confusion, anger, frustration. And internalized, we get stuck because we don't know what the next step is. And I figured out some ways that I might be able to suggest that people can help fix when they get internally stuck and they either repeat themselves or they're frustrated or they're angry and they can't get past it because they can't figure it out. Distract them with humor. Put on whatever their favorite fun song is that they love and dance silly in the middle of the room.
That's
find
a good
humor.
One.
Roll around on the ground. Toss a ball at the wall. Find fun in yourself and laugh. Also, an activity that distracts them, that takes their mind off of something else they were trying to process, helps get them off of what they're fixated on so that they can come back to it later. Also, I believe everybody keeps talking about it, having a pet, whether it's a dog or a cat, every survivor is imperative. It's like a child, but is better than a child because it's also our companion, our heart, and our protector. And when we're born, the only thing we have is our instincts, our heart, and our spirit. And animals totally function on instinct, which means if they know we're hurting, they come up and they curl up with us and they comfort us, and we can say anything to them and it's never repeated. They know if we're in danger because they will put themselves between us and danger. So
that's
we
right.
can get to their reactions and know if we're safe or not in our safe zones. And that's how we figure out how to find what works for us before we're ready to ever leave our safe zone of where our comfort area is, wherever it's our home, an apartment, a facility, wherever it is that you feel safe. That's where your starting point is, and that's where you have to find who your inner self is, and you can't be taught that. You cannot be corrected because all that does is shame the person. You can't discuss or talk about the past, because that's gone.
Right.
And if you wreck the person, all it does is hurt them.
I'm going to give you a good example, Jennifer, of what I want to stop you on one of the points before I lose them, because you're making quite a few good ones, and I'm gonna lose one. But one of the things that you were talking about, and you'll get a laugh out of this, but you were talking about distracting when we get into that, one of those difficult, conflicted places. And it was last week, Frank, because I had put down I had to put down my dog last week. And so the first day and the second day, I was pretty paralyzed, I guess. I was sitting. I couldn't cry. I could not cry. I couldn't move. I couldn't not move. I was just kind of frozen in place. And then it came to me. A friend of mine a long time ago laughed at me because I was talking like you were, Jennifer, about some of the things to do to get out of these deep situations. And when I got my first home many years ago, I got a weed whacker. And one time I was upset. I think a boyfriend and I had broke up or something, but I was in a bad place in my head, and I went out and weed whacked every friggin' blade of grass in the neighborhood. I weed whacked until I was so tired, I fell on my face and went to sleep, and the next day was a new day. I needed to distract. My mind was like one of those, a lot of you in the room are old enough to remember LP records, and when there'd be a skip in the record, and it would just keep going over and over and over, and you'd kind of need to give it a little bit of a tap, you know, to get it to move on and proceed. And one of the things I did this weekend, and Jennifer, you were also talking about when you're at home and the going out, the safe zone is what you were talking about. And I didn't feel in the state of mind I was in grieving this loss within 48 hours of my dog. I didn't feel like going out amongst them and trying to be in public. But what I did do is we've lived in our house for about 4.5 years, and the master bedroom has been on the front of the house, and it's bothered me because we live on a busy street. Not the noise so much as just something I read in a book a long time ago about feng shui, and it's saying that your bedroom should be in the back of your house because that's where it's more peaceful and where you'll feel more calm. And whether that's true or not, I believed it, and I had always had my rooms in the back of the house until we moved here. Well, I kept mentioning it, and I had been single all those times before. When we moved here, I mentioned it to my husband, and he said, well, this is the master bedroom. It's the bigger one. You know, that's silly. And so, of course, I didn't want him to think I was silly. I got enough other things, you know, to to worry about with him. And so I've managed to stay in the front of the house, and I've got sleep disorders anyway that came with my brain trauma. And so after a couple of days of this intense grief that had me frozen, I decided that, and when we got married, we had odd and end furniture in one of the other bedrooms, which we call our office. Our desks didn't match. We had some odd and end shelves, and there was a big sale at the local furniture store Columbus Day weekend, and I looked up, and my poor husband didn't know exactly what to do. He felt bad about the dog, of course, but I'm more emotional, at least overtly emotional, and I was just frozen, and I think he probably would have felt better if I would have cried or had some kind of a reaction, but I looked up after a couple of days and I said, I want to go to the sale and I want to get furniture that matches. And then because you're going to have to take your computer completely apart to put it on the new desk, I want to get a moving guy and switch those bedrooms out. I want to sleep in the back of the house where I believe it's going to be more peaceful and I'm going to get a better night's sleep. And suddenly I went from this frozen to the couch for 48-hour mode where I couldn't even process. Everything had just hit the wall emotionally and couldn't move one way or another. Again, it was like that stuck needle on the record. And I got into motion and started, you know, moving around the furniture, throwing out the trash, organizing, and I was doing that old weed whacker approach to things where I was distracting at such a level that I was constant motion until I was wearing myself out enough to be able to go to sleep that night. And it wound up working out really well, considering it did take a couple of days to do this. My poor husband wound up, you know, you can't buy furniture put together anymore. It comes, you know, in a bunch of boxes of planks, and a person has to spend a while with their pegs and their screwdrivers trying to put stuff together. But in any case, it wound up working out as I hoped it would, and I've been sleeping pretty good the last few nights because it is more peaceful in the back of the house. You don't hear the traffic that's in the front, and because I believed it was going to make a difference, it did make a difference, and I was able to get to the other side through that action. It got me out of being stuck and able to actually process the death of my dog and how that happened, and not to dwell on it, but to also not avoid it. You know, there's a thin line between avoidance, you know, where you just avoid it, and then you, for me anyway, I start getting physically sick if I'm not dealing. But at the same time, you know, you can't look back and stare, but you got to glance over your shoulder from time to time. You know, you can't look ahead and freak out and have anxiety about what may or may not happen, but you do have to glance to be able to make some plans or to have some things to look forward to. And so I do appreciate what you were talking about, Jennifer, because that's exactly what I needed to do to get unstuck over this last week was
exactly.
Going,
you know. I wanted to share something for everyone who is getting ready to or has just recently or is missing a pet. It's called Rainbow Bridge.
Yes.
It's an old Nordic legend. And what it is, it has nothing to do with going to heaven or anything religious. It is about our favorite pets that loved us and we love them. Their lifespan is not as long as ours, but they don't pass over. When they go over, when it is their time, they're making room for another lost soul that needs to be rescued. So they go to a place called Rainbow Bridge, and what it is it's fields and mountains and grass and food and water, and they're restored back to juvenile and health and playness, and they play and have fun and are taken care of all day, every day of their life, and they are there waiting until at one time one of them lifts their nose, sniffs, cocks their ears, and goes running because that person that they missed so badly that has passed on is there ready to be taken over to wherever they're headed to together. So the animal is not gone. It's still in our hearts.
Right.
The animal is waiting for us spiritually for whenever our time is ready. So, but their time is so short compared to ours. What it does is it opens up room for the people that are injured and need that comfort to also do something with their lives, where they're rescuing another. They are giving back of themselves, which makes them focus on something else's needs, not their own. And animals go by instinct. They will know immediately that you are hurt or you are injured or you need this kind of patience or you can only do that kind of stuff, and they need to be rescued just as bad as the survivors do. So we're a perfect match.
Right, and I think the dogs help us get in touch with our own instincts, our survival instincts, and the things that we need to do for ourselves, you know, in order to survive the best way that we can. Hang on one second, Jennifer. I'm going to let on area code 765. Who do we have?
Hi, Kim. It's Matt. How are you?
How are you, Matt? How are you feeling?
Better day. I got to see my family doctor. I think my physical therapist is supposed to come to the house. Life's good. I got to consider life being good. How's that? I made it through another game, and I'm wanting to call it over with, but it can't be for a couple of weeks. Anyway.
So you're doing the physical therapy?
They wanted to come to my... I was supposed to go back out to the rehab hospital. There was a lot of... The hospital I was at had never worked with that situation before. They'd never had a traumatic brain injury to an individual that had that type of surgery before.
Oh,
anyway,
I see.
Yeah, there was this confusion and that confusion, and I pretty much got tired of the confusion. I just wanted to come home. I told them yesterday morning one way or the other, I'm leaving. 52 years old, I'll walk out that door if I want to.
Well, yeah, you can certainly do that, even if you did have a bum leg. Huh? You meant hobble out that front door, didn't you?
Yeah, hobble. They could go their wheelchairs for a while and dust it off in the parking lot.
Oh. But you made it. Well, I'm so glad that you're at home. That's got to be when she, Jennifer was talking about the comfort place earlier. It's certainly a lot more comfortable at home dealing with what you're dealing with than it is in the hospital, that's for sure.
Sure. I didn't anticipate, and I should have expected that, you know, I'm healed. Ask anybody. And people like to leave a lot of their problems with me, and I like to try to figure out and talk to them to solve their problems. It has nothing to do with brain injury, just real life. And they still do that. So, man, my phone been off the hook yesterday and a half.
I bet it has.
I finally got some peaceful time, and this is like coming home again, just being back on the radio show with y'all. Get used to me, because I'm going to put a heavy load back on it. I was so hurt in the last 3 or 4 weeks. When we all started, I just didn't get as dedicated much time to it as I want to.
Oh, I know. Hang on just 1 minute. You sound so much better, Matt. I'm so glad that you're here. I'm going to, who do we have at area code 803?
It's Les Paul.
Hello,
I don't know why
Paul.
I'm on my cell phone, and for some reason I've noticed when I call in using my cell phone, it just automatically picks me to talk. I didn't mean to do that. I was just listening. Hi, everybody. Matt, I know you've been going through your own bridge over troubled waters lately, but it's nice to hear you. You sound like you're doing better.
I got a new group of therapists, and they would be you guys on Brain Injury Radio. I've become friends with so many of you, and I've still got guys I got to learn. I really don't know DJ all that well, but you make me feel better. Here we go.
Well, just keep on going. And this is kind of funny. I forgot what time it was, and I'm actually grocery shopping. I'm in a grocery store right now. And I said, oh, gosh, I got to call in Brain Injury Radio, and I'm just shopping while I'm talking on the radio. So.
A multitasker of all things. Anyone need anything at the store that Les Paul can pick up for us?
If you hear noises, it's the grocery store. I'm in a big Kroger.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go ahead, and if you decide to jump back in, do, and I will unmute one of our newest hosts that you guys haven't had you've probably had a chance to hear him as a guest, but not yet as a host, and for sure listen in Saturday night to our newest host, Keith Anthony. Say hi to everyone.
Hi, Kim, and hi, everybody else. How's my
hi,
level?
Keith.
Do I sound good?
Perfect.
Hey, Keith. Radio
sound great.
You got there,
buddy. I didn't catch that. Some people say I've got
great
radio.
He does. He sounds great. And for those of you listening, I met Keith. Well, I met Keith Anthony a while back, but... I think we originally met on another program, a near-death experience channel, and he also, I'm not going to steal his thunder, he can tell us all about it on Saturday night, but Keith Anthony is also a traumatic brain injury survivor, and also had a near-death experience, like many of us have talked about, and at some time we'll have a show on that. But I wanted to make sure to tell you guys his first show is Saturday night, and he does meditations, healing meditations along the lines of recovery, and really helped me one night with a meditation, and I won't give it away. Maybe I'll call in on his show Saturday night, depending on how things are going, and tell you a little bit about. Sorry?
Hit that clap. I said, hit that clap button you like so well. I do too.
Oh, gosh. Where is that thing? Thank you. I've never found that darn thing yet. Everybody else. Oh, here it is. All right. And for Keith Anthony.
Thank you very much. Thank you, fantastic Frank and Stephen, for those good words you're saying there. And I really enjoyed working with Kim when we did that meditation some time ago on the other show. Kim responded very well with that. And are you still getting benefit from that, Kim?
I am. And when I remember to use it, I always do. Sometimes, you know, and I think you're going to tell people this, it's like everything else. It's practice, practice, practice. When you've got a mind that goes a million miles an hour, slowing down the mind to focus, it was a lot easier to do with your voice. And so I've gone back a couple of times.
You're reading my mind here. It's incredible. You just said exactly what I was thinking.
We got the same minds, and they tell us we don't have any minds. See? We all got the same ones, so it must work, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about the practice, what we have to do is not so much to practice the technique, but what we need to do more than anything is to clear out the mind chatter.
Yes.
All those voices that are racing around in our head, and you know, say again?
The noise.
Yep.
The noise, that's a good word for it, yes. And I used to get a lot of that. My mind would be trying to sleep at night sometimes, and I'd start doing mental arithmetic. And what's the point of that? But it used to keep me awake every single night. And I just learned not to do that now.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, well, you have been at it a lot longer though. I remember after I've driven myself crazy for a while and my mind won't shut down, sometimes I'll start with the meditation and then my mind will go off. I found another thing that kind of has helped me when I not just remember to do it, but I have to take responsibility for the fact that sometimes I guess maybe I just like to suffer or I'm lazy, you know, I'm not sure what my excuse would be, but I'll be honest about it. One of the things I found that has helped me more recently to slow my mind down is to be able to get to that place where I can go through that meditation is to light a candle. And at the top of the candle, not where the yellow flame is and not where the wick is, but right above the wick where there's the little red part before it breaks out into the flame, I've been channeling, focusing on that red part, only seeing that and, you know, consciously trying to empty the thoughts out of my mind as I'm just focusing on that little red spot at the top of the wick, and pretty soon, it's really a trippy phenomena, I think, all I can see is the red and the rest of the room blacks out.
Mm-hmm. I think that's because I gave you red as a trigger, didn't I, if I remember correctly, I usually do.
Oh, yeah!
So anytime you want to get to that place, that deep relaxation that you were in, When we did that, just sit down, make sure you're safe, everything's turned off, you're not driving a car or anything like that, and just go back to that time and remember the color red. And you may be feeling it even now that you begin to feel more relaxed while you imagine the color red.
Isn't it interesting, though, that in the candle, that's what I honed in on was the color red, not the flame itself, but the red. So it does come back.
That's excellent, and that helps you. So whether you do it looking at the candle or whether you just imagine it in your mind, you could just imagine the red part of the candle in your mind. It will work just the same because it's all red. And the more times you do it, the easier it gets, as you said earlier on, practice. And you'll be able to get into a very deep state of relaxation very quickly.
Isn't that something? I'm amazed at each one of these shows that all of us hosts have, because I pick up something, a different twist even on the old, if not something new, a different twist on the old. Isn't that strange, Les? I mean, even when I thought of that light in the candle thing, until you said red, I didn't remember that, but that happened to be the part of the candle that I honed in on. So that's a pretty interesting thing.
And you may have noticed that when you're out and about on your business, you feel better when you see anything that's red, which is, I think, the suggestion I gave you when we did that show. So that wherever the red is, whether it's a red traffic light, a red stop light, red door, red dress, you're going to start feeling like you're getting a boost of goodness in you.
Well, it's good that my living room is red and purple, so I am surrounded by red a lot. You picked a good color for me.
Okay. It's a standard color that hypnotists tend to use because there's a lot of it around.
Well, I think we had a question. Who was that, you, Jennifer?
Yeah, I didn't have a question. I wanted to point out that focus, which you were both talking about, is something that is dear to my heart, because with all the chaos and clutter and emotions and confusion, focus is the only thing that makes us want, which makes us ever take that next step, because everything is one step at a time. So if we can get to a place where we have a safe zone, whether it be a corner in the back of a room where there is no noise, no sound, no nothing, no disturbances going on, and you can just sit there for, even if it takes you an hour or a day, just sit there and stare into a corner and just don't even think about what is bothering you, but just let your mind just fly. It will bring focus to your mind without you even realizing it. The answers will come, because as survivors, our focus is actually better because we don't have all the distractions of life and learning and education, all the other crap in our heads. The only thing that we have is about learning about ourselves. So if we're just given that time to just go by ourselves and organize our thoughts, focus comes to us when we're ready.
Well, yeah, I think it comes when we stop fighting it, definitely. But it is something that, I mean, I don't even realize, you know, when things are scattered a lot of the time until I start feeling the anxiety, you know, that I was talking about, the heart racing, the blood pressure going up, and that's when I need to start channeling that focus, because I realize things are scattering like ashes in the wind, or leaves in the wind. If you're in Nebraska these days, it's cold. We got cold all of a sudden. High of 54 tomorrow.
You did the absolute focus, though. When you lost your pet, instead of dealing with the grief, you focused on making your environment safe and comfortable for yourself, which took you out of what it is that you were conflicted by. So
right.
You refocused on something else until your body and your mind and your heart and your instincts were ready to deal with it. And that caused you to refocus.
Right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And it gave me something, too, to feel. Not only did that action get me unstuck, but it also gave me something to feel good about. You know, every now and then when you get a hard hit, you know, like maybe Matt just having his surgery, or when we all had our TBI, or the loss of a relationship like Frank was talking about earlier, the loss of my pet 10 days ago like I was talking about, we get that hard hit. And for a moment, at least for me, it's hard for me to see the light at the end of the tunnel being anything other than a train. And, you know, that busyness, that distraction and focus not only, well, distracted me, but because that change was made, it gave me a feeling of satisfaction and something I could feel good about. And that kind of put the yin next to the yang again. And then I was able to sit down emotionally calmly, if that makes sense, and actually process the loss of my dog, you know, and realize, you know, I never had any doubt when Keith Anthony and I were on the NDE, near-death experience show. I didn't have any doubt when I let my... In fact, I don't know if I told you guys this the other night. If I did and I forgot, I apologize. But the night before, my dog had been suffering, I guess. She probably could have suffered a while longer, but I prayed, because I couldn't get a clear answer of what was right. It wasn't going to be so simple. It wasn't going to be a really clear-cut answer as to when, unless I just let it go, you know, and watched her suffer, I was going to need to make a decision. And so I prayed about it. And then I sat down on the floor with her, and I looked into her soul, and she looked into mine. We looked into each other's eyes, and I said, "Are you ready? Or do you want me, you know that I'll do anything you want me to do. We can keep going, but if you're ready to be set free, I'll help you get there." And she put her hand, her paw up on my shoulder. And
aww.
I know, and I had a tear run down my eye, but I knew that she was ready to be finished. She was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and it was okay. You know, it was
for another one that needed you.
Right. It was okay for me to let her go. And so after the moving of the furniture and the wearing myself out and the feeling good that now I was going to be sleeping in a peaceful place, I was able to look at the fact that she was going to be sleeping in a peaceful place, and that the dog who had been with me when I had my brain rupture, who was the best nurse in the world, Frank, he lived to be 16 and had passed, and my grandpa, who I saw in my near-death experience, who had passed many years ago, I realized that Frank and my grandpa were there to meet Annie, and that Annie wasn't alone. She was healthy, and her spirit was alive and soaring again, and that it was about me missing her, because we've been together from the time she was 5 weeks old for 10 years. And, you know, my husband and I had been married for 7. We dated for about a year and a half before that. He's gaining on her, but before this relationship with my husband and leaving my parents out, the longest relationships I had ever had before in my life were with my animals. You alluded to trust earlier, Jennifer, and that was, I think, where I first learned to trust, was from the animals. I'm an only child. They were my siblings. I stayed single for a long time. They were my friends, my confidants, the ones that I trusted the most. The only place I found that unconditional love and acceptance, both before my brain injury and after my brain injury. It sounds like we've got about 60 seconds. For any of you that want to stay on after, we'll have a little bit of overtime, but I'll make some closing comments, close the show in the usual way, because our our live listeners will be falling off. I want to thank everybody who listened to the show tonight and who supports Brain Injury Radio. We've got a show on, I think, every night a week now, don't we? I was going to say, a couple of weeks ago, we were short a couple of hosts, but I think Keith Anthony has rounded out our lot. Make sure to listen to him on Saturday. And every night, same time, same channel. I'm going to close the show in the usual way with something I believe that we all have, and that is a guardian angel with Leah West. See you next Wednesday. Thanks so much for being here. Night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
God replied, yes, it's your time to leave. But don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you. Quietly hoping and praying.
Okay, we've rolled into overtime.
Overtime it is.
I have a question.
What's that?
This is Matt.
Yes.
And I've seen where this new guy's coming on. Damn it, I took the thing off my screen right now. What's his name? Keith Anthony?
Keith Anthony. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. He's got a great, nice, you know, where's he from?
He's from England. He's in the London area.
Oh. Cool. I got a lot of friends on my Facebook from England, and yeah, they got a different tracking point, but the same. I wanted to ask you, he was talking about red, and then I'm out of the picture on it. I'll let you guys get going.
No, it's okay. I think he's still here, even.
I'm
still here. He's here.
Hi, Keith. Welcome to the group of us. We like it.
Who is that talking?
Sure do.
That's Matt.
Matt. Okay.
Yeah.
To meet you.
Everything with this red being something that is a calming, attention grabbing kind of thing. Is that what you were saying?
I was saying that hypnotists tend to use the color red because there's a lot of it around, and that's what we call a hypnotic gift. It's something we give to people before we leave them, so that when we're gone, that we carry on doing our work, because we give you a gift like the color red, which has a specific job to do, and in usually we attribute that to relaxation or a boost in energy, and that will carry on years after we have gone.
Okay, well, you got to get used to me a little bit, and I very much understand it. I was taking notes. I've never really talked or heard you before. Like I say, I've had issues, but I'm over them. The color red. So does that mean my friends that have red sports cars and red Jeeps and stuff like that, why they're always getting pulled over by the cops?
Well, now, Matt, I call that arrest me red.
Because I didn't know if they were hypnotizing the cops somewhere in their training system, or they're taught to pull over red cars or what. I got a little different attitude, and that's just my thought on that also. I'm on the serious part with you, but I got to be on the other side of Matt Duffin looking at it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like to say something about colors, because I totally understand and totally believe in how they make the internal feel, because I relate to colors. I had to fight really hard, because when I came home, I was legally blind, and I didn't know the difference between my hand and the TV across, large screen TV across the room. But I've realized that my kitchen, where I do any kind of business, where I have to be focused on what I'm doing, I have red everywhere. I have red gloves. I have red pens. I have a red stapler. I have that kind of stuff. When I need my relax time, My living room is done with green because it's a very peaceful, calming surrounding.
To me.
And my bedroom is non-distinct except for memories. I have a memory wall in my bedroom that has things that make me smile. So I wake
sure.
up and I go to sleep and I see those happy memories. And that is
where
I wake up every day.
That's where Kim would never let me decorate anything around her or her husband's house because my core beliefs make me hate red because the Red Devils were red and hate purple because tigers were purple. And that was my rival.
For God's sake.
We don't have jock straps hanging from the lamps either.
This is Les Paul. I just wanted to share something. I'm on a behavioral health board in Augusta, Georgia, and one thing they've started doing is that we've got a team of people that come in and look for the calming colors, the ones that certain bright colors tend to make people more aggressive and harder to take care of. So they started painting and being very careful about what they paint, the rooms, and when they do it, they want to make sure the sound isn't set too high on televisions and things like that. And I couldn't believe what a difference it's made. It feels more like you're at home when you walk in there when I first started on this board. I'm just wondering what you guys thought about that.
I wonder about that too, Jennifer, and it's a combination of you and Keith Anthony, because I tend to think two of the more calming colors being like, you know, the muted blues and greens and things like that. Red, you tend to think of like anger, you know, red faced, like, or arrest me red,
right.
Like my old Mustang convertible. I'm kind of
right.
surprised that red from
yes,
the hypnotist
I,
point of
just,
view.
Well, the reason we use
too.
Red, I explained that very easily.
Thing
you
were talking about.
We use
anchor.
Red because
you
one at a time, you guys. Wait a minute.
You can
okay.
call it's called an anchor. Keith knows what I'm talking about. An anchor could be any color, and Keith just chose red. I don't know why he chose red, but it could be a blue, it could be a yellow, it could be green, anything like that.
I see all the colors, the different colors.
Okay. So the anchor is just the color that you're tied to for that. And you picked a good one for me, Keith Anthony, so that's good.
The reason we used red in that case was because when you see a red traffic light, that usually makes you angry, doesn't it? So I use red and gave you the suggestion you'll be more relaxed so that when you see a red traffic light, then you don't feel so angry. It just gives you a boost instead of a dive.
Put a second anchor into that because red usually means anger. And that means you had to put another anchor in there, right? Anchor,
right. Well,
anchor
like
had to be something that's going to be calming. That was a post-it action that suggestion you did, right?
It is post-hypnotic suggestion, yes, or an anchor, absolutely.
Okay, so thank you for clarifying. I know what you did. And the reason, why did you choose red? Because red is a common color?
Well, I didn't choose red. This is based on the teaching that I've had from other people who are far in excess of my skills, and they suggested red for particular things. And the reason, as I said earlier on, the reason they choose red is because red does normally cause you anger, particularly
yeah.
when you get to a red traffic light. So now when you get to, if I've used red as the anchor, when you get to red traffic lights, you just feel calm and peaceful instead of getting aggravated that you've had to stop. Because when you think about it, really, it's no big deal that you've had to stop. You know, life isn't one smooth highway, is it? Sometimes we have to go and sometimes we have to stop. So why get angry about a red traffic light?
No.
So
I actually understand red.
I do too, and I think that I appreciate the further explanation and clarification, Keith Anthony and Frank, about about the anchor and the red and the post-hypnotic suggestion, because then I think, too, you know, when I'm no longer angry about the red traffic light, what that means to is to stop, and stop no longer has a negative connotation, but it's a suggestion of what my mind needs to do when I'm going into this meditation.
Right, right.
So it's cool how it all links together.
I said 5 seconds first. So when you're working with this and you know these colors and these are the teachings, then do you discover other colors along the way that you do on your own that affects you, notice affects you in a different way, or is more helpful to you?
Ask him on his show.
I am practicing for his show. I took notes. I got to know this question to ask. See,
I use different colors. I use blue and red and green and black, and you can see some video on YouTube of me hypnotizing somebody, a good friend of mine in Alaska. We did it on screen. And with her, I use red markers and blue marker pens. If I show her a blue marker pen, she instantly goes asleep, goes into trance.
Right.
Oh, wow.
What is your YouTube video? Could you send it to me?
You can get to my channel by clicking on the link that I put in the chat box there, and that's a playlist that I've got there. But my, if you want to get directly to it, you can go to youtube.com/KeithAnthony0169, and I think I've got 4 hypnosis videos there that I did with my friend Ino in Alaska.
Keith Anthony, I'm starting to type that into the chat. So you said youtube.com/
I'm typing it already because
thanks.
I've got it on my clipboard because
I
did take the last bit off and put my name in, Keith.
Yeah, I saw you do that earlier, but it's up pretty far in the scroller deal. So if you could do it again, then Frank can grab it.
But does this have anything to do with?
There it is. Sorry, you guys. It's in the chat now.
Oh, man, I'm just trying to find him by typing in Keith Anthony on the YouTube search box. I like to make things easier for people.
Which one word.
Is that you in your life? Are you bending that girl over in the background, Keith?
Say again?
Are you bending the dancer over? Is that you with the blonde hair?
No. That's a friend of mine who's in Moldova, and that's her boyfriend who's with her. She's a
Good
professional dancer.
God, you guys.
There's got to be a way to type something in the search box that goes right to all his stuff on YouTube is what I'm asking.
Well, Matt, for one thing, it's all one word, so don't type it separate. It's Keith Anthony, one word.
Right.
With 0169 after it.
Yeah. Zero.
Oh, just in the YouTube. 0169. I'm terrible with numbers. Thank you.
You bet.
K
E I T H A N T H O N E. One word, Keith Anthony.
Okay, I'm better now. I try to make it simple for people. I don't like passing around all them numbers on the chat, on the line, and this, and look at the website. I don't want to just go to YouTube and type in this, man. That's what I tell people to do.
And that's what I told him about Lady Gaga font, too. So
I'm going to put another link in here, which is direct link to one of my videos. There we go. That's one of my hypnosis videos. That's an indirect hypnotic and it's easier demonstration.
Awesome.
I'll find the other links and put them in so you'll be able to link straight to them. And...
Well, one thing we're not going to do tonight is tell Matt his color. Matt's got to come back Saturday on your show and figure out his color.
I'm with you on that. I don't care.
Everybody else can have a color tonight, but Matt.
Color, Matt. Color, like all of ours.
I like it when
Matt's
I ask colors. Questions I'm going to ask on the air because that way I don't look stupid, and I'm already stupid.
No, you're not. Matt's colors are earth tones, just like all of us. We come from the earth. We're here on the earth, and we end up going back to the earth. So his colors are earth tones, whatever he chooses.
Well, thank you, but I've assumed they've always been blue and gold. Just about everything I've done in life has had a blue or a gold in it, if not both together.
Is that a beer bottle?
But thank you. Well, can this key fill mine and has time? See, I'm getting ready to talk our boss, so I don't know what y'all think, but if not every, and I don't care if it's every night, we might want to need an hour and a half show because people like to call and talk. People like to talk. That if we want to do our own little program or have time for it, because if it don't work out to where we can do that or have a guest, we can turn them phones on anytime we want. We got plenty of people to talk with to get going.
Well, wait, one thing I would tell you about that is that, first of all, you don't need to even talk to the boss. You can schedule up to a two-hour show if you want to, but it is recorded. The only thing, and I'm not sure that Craig understands this, but my understanding is that the only thing that happens, if I schedule a 60-minute show, what happens is that the people who aren't logged in, called in, just the people who happen upon it, you know, on their computer, the live listeners, they fall off. That's why we end the show. If it's a 60-minute show, we end the show, and then those callers are gone. But my understanding is that when we carry it over into overtime, it's still recorded, and so people, when they go back and listen to the show in the archive, say I've scheduled a 60-minute show, but we've talked for 90 minutes, they're going to be able to hear the 90 minutes in the archive. So it's not like the show ended and we're just privately talking. We'd have to go to one of those go-to meetings or do a group Skype call or do something like that if we didn't want to be public, because theoretically we are public right now.
So we have to be
is when we get a... Hang on, Jennifer, this is work discussion for me. I love you, baby, but we got to... If we have a great guest, a certain doctor or a certain representative or some senator or something like that, it isn't going to happen.
Otherwise,
if they want to talk and give what else they want to talk, it's going to take longer than a half hour for them to do that. If you still want to have call-ins, especially people that want to call in, if those guys want to hang around and take questions, it's going to take us longer than the 20 minutes to cover each speech. Does that make sense? Did I say that right?
Yes, Matt. And my understanding on that, Matt, is that you can... If you schedule an hour show, what you could do if it looks like you're not finished with your guest or you want to go on with your guest is you can say...
We got to deserve that respect that we want them on live that night because people will be listening because it's a certain guest. You know, like you had a senator or Bill Clinton or something like that.
You can either...
We're not smooth enough to run that show like David Letterman is that quick. You know, we're just not that smooth yet.
If you schedule an hour show, you have up to another hour of overtime.
Okay.
So what you could do is, if you're not sure, like Keith Anthony did schedule his show for 2 hours, which I thought was real brave of him the first time out to do that.
Sure.
He scheduled it for 2 hours. But what you could do... If you don't schedule your show for, you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours, you can schedule your show for 1 hour And if it looks like you're not finished with your speaker, your guest, and you want to keep going, then you can say to the live listeners, this is the end of our live show, but we're going to continue this interview for a while longer, so you can pick up the rest of the interview and archive. And that would encourage.
So they wouldn't be able to make any call-ins to that guest, though.
No, after from the time that you scheduled it, if you scheduled an hour show, nobody can get in who isn't already on the board.
I do have a question.
We'd have to be very timely in getting our show done if we had a guest that served that kind of respect that people wanted to hear what they had to say, what they wanted to talk to, but you just want to have to get that out of the way first hour, right? That's what you're saying?
Well, I am. I guess, you know, what I tended to do in the past, and we're all kind of just learning this as we go now, how we're going to do it. But, you know, on my original show, all I ever did was interview people, so I didn't have the distraction of people calling in, and we actually got our points out, and we did a flat interview. Now, what I would do if I had a guest on, to be honest, just because everybody's got memory problems and so forth, my choice, and you guys could do whatever you wanted, is I would probably interview my guest and take calls at the end and not interrupt my guest's flow. But at the same time, there's going to be other guests where you might want to, you know, take calls and interrupt.
I get my receipt when I finish.
Like tonight, and I apologize, but I've probably made Jenny mad at me because I've had to quiet her down a couple times so I get the point across. And then
never
move on to the next point. Because these are the respect that we're going to have to show these other guys, because we have a tendency to ramble, like I am kind of right now. We have a tendency to repeat some of the same things we've already said. And, you know, it's coming out of our mouth in a different kind of thought in the same sense.
Right.
You know, we all do that. I ain't seen any one of us that don't yet. But when we we eat up radio time. See what I'm saying? Then you're eating
I
up.
I do.
Where instead of somebody, you're giving somebody the opportunity to talk for 5 or 7 minutes. You don't have many dollars or nothing. But you also got to quiet them down. Get their point across, pay attention yourself, act right yourself, and get it moving, you know, cut them off in a nice way. We got to figure that out so we can move on.
I actually figured it out before, but now I'm going to have to figure it out again. When not as many people called in, I muted the mics unless we were talking, but because that way people aren't talking over each other. One way to ensure people aren't going to talk over each other is muting the mics. But what I found out is that when I've got 7 people on the board and I don't know whose area code is who, I don't know who I'm muting. And that can be inconvenient because somebody could be like, you know.
That's where you need help, somebody writing it down for you. Right, go ahead.
Yes, but we actually have a thing, and in fact, I should go try to look at it right now, because there's a way that if we put our cursor up on the name, and I know you guys aren't in the studio, but if I can figure this out right now, I can tell you. And
you can edit it and put their name in there.
That's what I thought. Don't you just put the cursor underneath the... There, you do. Okay, so who's area code 484?
That's Jennifer Stokely.
Okay, so I just typed Jennifer. Okay, and 765 is... Okay, that's how you do it, you guys. This is how you do it, then. Keith Anthony is right. You guys all know how you have the list of phone numbers over on the left?
Yeah.
If you put your cursor lightly on the telephone number, you're going to see a box come up underneath the phone number. And you can click in that and type in the person's name.
Cool.
So when I just said 484 and she said Jennifer, I just typed in Jennifer. And then there's a button right under her name that says save or cancel. So I hit save. And now Jennifer's name is underneath her telephone number. And
bless
if you. So if you do that, each time somebody calls in, when you say area code 615, who do I have, and they say who they are, right that minute, if you can, type in their name, and then you're going to have the name corresponding with the phone number all the way through. And if you wind up hearing noise on the line, or you just want to slow things down if people are talking over, mute a couple of the mics.
Well, and
what number do you have for me, Kim?
You Skyped in, didn't you? Because I have your name.
Oh, yes, you're right, I did. So you don't have a number for me.
No, and that's what happens when I call in, because I always Skype too, so my name would be there. But most of the time you don't see Skype in here, you see phone numbers. So,
do you guys
so,
have three-digit area codes? I don't know.
Well, on Skype, you make up a name. On Skype, you just make up a name.
We have three-digit area codes.
Yeah, I know we do here in America. I didn't know what England did.
Oh, you meant in England. I thought you meant Skype versus the telephone. Yeah, do you have a three-digit area code, Keith Anthony?
In England, it's four digits, but we drop the zero at the front, and it becomes three. I think that's what you mean. But
yeah.
We have all the area code actually is three digits, because the first bit is my number is 0208, and that just identifies that it's outside London. And the next bit, 664, is for Croydon.
Right.
We have a one, like you guys have a zero, then, is what you're trying to say. That's my strongest guess. Sound like that to you, Kim? Or,
yeah, you dial zero instead of one first in England.
When I dial America from England, I have to dial 001.
Oh.
But in England, if you're calling out of your area code, out of your, like, if you're calling from Hampshire.
Another city.
Or Portsmouth, up north to Liverpool or something. They have different area codes. You're telling me those are three digits and you dial that place.
Oh, no, it's different all over the country. In the London area,
right.
we have a three-digit code. And in
right.
the rest of the country, they just have a really long number.
Oh, so you just dial a zero to get your long distance, and then whatever the area code number might be. We do that with a one. Like if I was to call Les down in, you know, we're several
South Carolina.
States. Yeah, thanks. I always get a second. Is North South Carolina or Georgia? Anyway.
Well, you could call him in Georgia, but he won't be there.
It's really on the border of Augusta, Georgia. So it's Aiken County, South Carolina, but we're really close to Augusta, Georgia.
I kind of knew what I was talking about. Thank you, Les.
You did. Well, that's good. So I'm glad we remember. So that's one way that we'll be able to do it, is by typing the names in. I'm glad that
we
you.
To call him. See, that's what I'm trying to get to. I'm thinking ahead of the box.
Well, if you ever want to call Keith Anthony, you should probably Skype him, because otherwise you're going to be paying long-distance charges out of country.
No, I thought the new studio was supposed to be able to call each other.
I don't know about out of country. I don't know. It is an 800 number, but I don't know how that works.
No, great.
I've always just Skyped him.
I just
wanted to say something. This is Les. Craig was telling me he has had a lot of trouble with Skype recently. Do you know what he's talking about?
I haven't had any trouble.
I have not been able to get on only by phone.
The hesitation
okay.
that Skype produces. Is that you understanding? You know how Skype kind of breaks up every once in a while?
Okay.
I understand that, but I haven't had any trouble with Skype. I always use my headset, and I've never had any problem with it.
You must be careful with...
Evidently, where he is in Spokane, he gets a lot of that hesitation anymore. It's probably a sunspot we talked about.
It's more likely to do with his computer than Skype. He needs to defragment the disk and do some maintenance. Close all unnecessary windows.
You try to talk him into doing something else.
Wait a minute. That's the exact answer. He just hit the exact answer without knowing it. Well, you found out last night, didn't you, Keith Anthony? It's too many windows open. That's what he did. In fact, I did that. One of the things, and I'll give you another tip. I logged in, I went into the studio, but then I opened up a second window because I wanted to see the show page to refer to something on the show page. Well, when the lady answered the phone when I Skyped in to say, "Welcome to Blog Talk Radio," it echoed because I had two windows open. So it said, welcome to Blog Talk. You know, it did it like that, so I had to close the other window. So part of the problem he might be having, too many windows open.
What you have to do, Kim, when that happens is to, when you're on your show page, is to press the stop button so that the player's not playing.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, good. But I bet you anything, you hit it. That's what Craig's problem with the Skype was. I do recommend, though, for the other hosts, I usually have a phone close by because I've been around Blog Talk Radio long enough to know that sometimes problems do come up where people say that their calls are dropped by Skype or whatever. So it is handy so that you don't panic and melt down if you're using Skype and it looks like it's dropped off, that you have a telephone near you somewhere so you can just dial into the show and make sure that you have the show number. Like the other night, Les, when you had your friend call in to tell us what was going on.
I was wondering if you mentioned that. That was hilarious. It was scary.
Well, I mean, that's happened to all of us. We've all had something happen. One night I logged on. It was my first show. I set the time when I scheduled the show for 9 o'clock. Well, I set it for 9 o'clock my time. But it's actually, I need to do, and when I logged on, it said that my show wasn't on for 2 hours, and I showed my show was going to start in like a minute and a half, and I hurried that fast into the studio, got to edit the program, switched it to 7 because I realized immediately what I had done, and when I got back over to the studio, she said, "Your show will start in 5, 4, 3, 2, so I know what you mean. But that night, you know, you could have even, like, had the telephone and just skipped the computer, you know what I mean, and just dialed into the show like that, to the host number.
When we had brain injury radio conventions here in a couple of years, we'll laugh about all this stuff.
With me last night, I just wanted to say, my computer literally changed my password in the middle of it to my, I can't say, my wireless connection, and I was locked out of it just before the show started, and I started panicking, saying, "Oh my goodness!" And so I called my friend who was listening to the show, and she actually told on the radio that Les Ball's having some problems. He'll hopefully be with you in a few minutes. And my guest, Tiffany Johnston, she just started talking, and we had rehearsed what we're going to say a little bit just to get the intro, and so we had to wing the whole thing.
And the show worked out really good. The only thing you'd do different at all, if that ever happened in the future, is if you have a problem with the computer, just dial into the host number and you can, you know, like you said, you won't be able to see the chat room until you get your computer back up and going. But as far as making it to the studio on time or making it to your guest on time, all you've got to do is dial that host number and you can do the whole thing by telephone away from the screen. But it's a learning curve for all of us when we're just starting. I don't think there's any of us that haven't done something.
You guys are so serious, and Kim can speak so well, and I'm sure Keith's just going to have a great show. It's going to be so serious, but I'm going to have serious guests and subjects and things. It's just going to be wild having all these different types of brain injury survivor shows to show the world and get other, build confidence in some other people out there that have brain injuries. Now, I'd love nothing more than to do this for a year than figure out somebody else that I trust to take it over. I mean, that's my plan.
Well, you just never know. You just take it as it comes and see how it goes. You know, I didn't know either. It was funny. I had been doing that half-hour show all summer just to see if I could do it and trying to learn to work the equipment. And I told myself in the spring when I started it that in the fall I would make up my mind whether I was going to move on to some other totally different thing and leave it behind me, or whether I'd start paying and have my own show, expand my own show that I had been doing. And you just never know how things are going to work out. Right in the, you know, this is fall, so right when I was going to be deciding what to do, Craig got a hold of me and asked me, you know, a month and a half ago if I wanted to be a host on this channel. So you never really can plan, you know, how things are going to happen.
It come up different for all of us, you know. I was trying to write sports again after I hurt myself, and I knew that that was too frustrating. I had called and talked to Craig after I found their radio show back in April. I talked to him a few times. And when I retired from writing, my doctors kept saying, well, we don't want you frustrated, but what are you going to do? And God opened up yet another door. Craig asked me if I wanted to be a host for a show. I don't care. I ain't got nothing else to do now.
Well, and that's how it works for all of us. And I had talked to Keith Anthony. You know, he started the near-death experience show, and a lot of drama we won't go into happened there with the person that ran that channel. So he was kind of in between gigs. And because I met him on that show and knew that we both had a brain injury and both had some similar experience and we got along, I told him about this, you know, when I started doing this. I said, you ought to think about it, you know.
Sure.
Came back on the NDE show, and I said, you know, that was such a hassle the first time. I don't know that I'd go back to the trough. You know, here's another thing that you may or may not be interested in. You know, see how this works for you. And so, you know, none of us knows what's going to happen when we get up in the morning by the end of the day. But, you know, we're all here now for a reason. So that's good.
That's right.
So Keith and I are going to have some very interesting and long talks sometime when we got time, aren't we, Kim?
Yes, I'm sure that you will. I'm sure that you will.
As many near-death experiences as I had to go through for a couple of months, yeah, we're going to have fun.
I wanted to add a suggestion.
What is it?
Oh, for anybody who wants to get on TBI Blog Radio, and they have that particular show that they want to listen to, go ahead and save the number in your phone under your addresses as TBI Blog Radio. And that way you will always be able to find it, and you can plug in your recharger, attach it to your phone before the show starts, and just put it on speakerphone and just dial it. And when you're ready to talk, just hit 1. And that way you don't ever have to remember or worry about Skype or anything else, and you don't get distracted by watching what's going on the screen.
Well, but the hosts have to remember to put... Wait. Good idea. But the hosts have to remember to put in the host number, not the program number, because otherwise they won't be able to unmute callers and things like that.
Oh, yes.
Under BIR Radio... Call in, radio host, and that seems to work right beside.
Yeah. You see, in the studio, it gives the guest number and the host number. You just, if you're going to save a number to your phone, you might want to put 2 numbers in there. Put 1 in that says host, because if you're the host that night, you don't want to just call into the program number, because somebody's got to unmute the mic to let you talk. You know.
Oh yeah.
And keep the number, even though it's on your screen, keep it handy in front of you the night of your show to log in to whatever special number you got to use.
Very important for people that want to call in and share, because this is for TBI survivors who want to ask questions and want advice. And I just need anybody that's listening to let me know if I become a problem, because this is so interesting to me that I tend to talk too much. So if I get too involved, please stop me and let me know, or just let, or go to the next person, because I realize that there are so many people that want to call in but maybe aren't ready, but will eventually when they are ready and want to. And
right.
I was still trying to figure out how to give you enough confidence to have your own show. I still think you should have your own show.
I just want to help with anybody who I think has a great subject.
Well, why don't you have your own?
And
you know we're going to help you if you need help. What's wrong with that?
Well, she'll get around to it. In the meantime, we need helpers. We need people to show up, call in, be in the chat room, ask questions.
Right.
You know, she's very helpful and, you know, in the chat room, because it's hard. It's hard for the host.
I just feel she needs a little more confidence pushed her way, because she will do it, because if she likes to sit in a little corner, I call it for a while, and I understand, and we all do that, but I don't think it's healthy full time, and I think you need to get confident boost to do that. I've been around people. I've talked to a lot of people.
She's on her way. She's on her way. Don't worry about it. This is helping already.
Are you telling me to have more patience again?
Yes. She's doing fine out of her corner, manning the chat room and calling in. She'll get to it when she gets to it.
Okay. I want to add something. She's going to be on my Blog Talk Radio show, not the evening show, but my afternoon show next Thursday afternoon. I'm going to interview her for my From Floor to Fantastic show.
Well, I'll
interview
try to listen to call in and talk to her a little bit then. I love her.
Stop it, Muffin. Now, that's a good idea, Frank. Walk before she runs. Be a guest.
Yeah. Yes.
That's a really good idea. You should consider that. That's a good idea.
I've already agreed and offered and said yes, and I've already come up with different ideas, but I have to brainstorm and decide what is the best thing to start with, because I have to talk from a beginner TBI survivor, and that is the only way I can help others who are in the beginning stages. Is sharing my errors, my oopses, my falls, my mistakes, and how I learned from them on my own. And that's the only way I can help.
Well, and right, and everybody has their own way of their own fixation of how they work on itself. That's why I was asking our English gentleman that, does he find
his own... Who said he's a gentleman?
I'm giving them a break. We won the war.
Sorry, Keith Anthony, you've always been a gentleman.
Right, I want to know if he found Colbert
well,
on his own.
I don't think it's so much you won the war. We just decided we'd had enough of you, so we left.
Let those
rebels
go.
That's sounding better now, but you tried to come back and take it again once. It's all good.
All right, Jennifer, do you know how to... Wait a minute, wait. First things first. Jennifer, do you know how to get a hold of Frank if you decide to be on that show? And don't overthink it. He's an experienced host, and you'll be given the words that you need at the time that you need them.
We have already done the email.
We have already
got it on board for the 25th at,
good.
I believe it's at
3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. to 3:30.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I am
Frank,
on the East Coast.
You live?
All right, Muffin, what are you worried about? They got it worked out.
I want to know where Frank lives. I was curious.
I got a message for Frank.
Rochester, New York.
Frank?
Yes.
Frank, you sent me an email with some audios in it, and I sent you an email back, but you didn't respond. Because the audios didn't play. I don't know what's wrong. It's a wrong URL or something, but I couldn't download them, because each one I downloaded was 1 kilobyte.
Well, I have no idea what I sent you because I can't remember what I sent you.
Okay.
I have to do it and figure out what happened. Thank you, Keith.
It'll be in your sent items folder.
They
That's
what?
True. Sent. Don't you have on your email something that says sent? You have your inbox and your outbox and then one that says sent?
I don't find it. Thank you.
Yeah, if you look for sent, you'll find one.
I don't know whether maybe you had those files in a shared folder rather than the public folder at Dropbox, and that would have caused the problem. If they're in a public folder, then I should be able to download them.
That's good. Everyone knows how to get a hold of everyone, and that's all I was making sure.
Use your command stuff. You couldn't open them, could you?
I downloaded them, but they were only 1 kilobyte. They didn't download properly.
Okay.
So there's an issue there. I don't know what the issue is.
And it must be yours, Frank, because he's good on the computer. Just like at our house, it's always got to be my issue because my husband is better on the computer.
Well, I know what he's talking about. I had to have these files sent to me special. And I think the woman who sent them out to me is going to have to send them to Keith. They are called Your Wish is Your Command.
Oh.
I'm going to make the rest of y'all's night very pleasant, very enjoyable. I'm going to say goodnight. I've taken notes for an hour. I've had to interrupt to ask what questions I had to ask. I've listened to my talk pretty well for me.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Well, what would I be? You know, every company needs a resident asshole. And, you know, I want to be our first leader in the residential asshole department. So,
well,
anything you
want
to put over, Jimmy, just remember, I love you while I'm doing that.
Okay, Matt. Well, you get a good night's sleep. Feel better.
Yeah, well.
Good night.
And we love you, Matt.
Fine.
He's awesome.
He's awesome, but he can't swear on the radio anymore. We have AM rights. We can get put off the radio by him saying naughty words, so he can't do that anymore.
Yes.
Yeah, but that is a filter that he has to learn on his own because we have to learn our own internal filters. So that's something that he has to control and work on. And I have listened to him, and he is working on it.
Yeah, he's got to keep working on it because the FCC doesn't care. They know. You know what I mean?
We'll talk
to him nicely about it. I'm not beyond it myself. It's just, yeah, he's got to watch that because, again, this is recorded. So anyway, but that's good. It's a learning curve for everybody. We're all new.
Everything is a learning curve for us for the rest of our lives.
Well, and then there's that. Yeah. Then there's that. There's the bigger one. So did you get done grocery shopping?
Yes, I did. I felt funny. I've been shopping the entire time I've been on the show.
You know what's weird is I haven't heard any of it. You'd think you'd hear, you know, Blue Light Special on aisle 3
I haven't heard anything. I can possibly be. I just walked into my home a minute ago. I'm back outside at my car.
I'd like to see what he picked up when he was talking. He probably picked up munchies and junk food.
Did you get anything you went to get? Were you able to focus on the show talking?
I was barely able to focus. I got a few things I went for, but I decided I'd get the very basics and come back tomorrow early.
That was a good plan.
And you got the munchies and the junk food, didn't you?
This is where my TBI got me. I lost track of the time, and I thought I still had another hour before the show. And I'm in the store, and the show had already been on about 30 minutes. And I'm saying, oh, my gosh, I forgot all about it. And I'm thinking I still had 30 more minutes minimum. And I was going to go home and call right in, and so I never was able to do that. I drove home, everything, while I'm talking to everybody.
That's okay. I was the host. My husband and I were watching a show at 8 o'clock our time, and he said, "Don't you have a show tonight? This is Wednesday." And I said, "Yep." I was like, "Oh, I decided to put a canned. Unless I'm having a special guest, I'm going to have the same show description because it's broad enough, you know, to accommodate almost anything." And so I did put recurring shows in, so now I don't have to worry about remembering to schedule my show. I guess I just have to remember to show up. But I was on the computer looking up facts about denial at 20 minutes till, you know, and I said, I have got to quit planning ahead like this for the show. But somehow if I plan ahead, days ahead, and make a meticulous show, then something happens to glitch it. And if I don't plan it a lot and just start talking, everybody seems to, the shows seem to be better. They're just more spontaneous, and I get us started with a topic, and then we either stay on topic or stray. It doesn't really matter.
What I find works great is when you have a subject that's up there that somebody is really interested in, is brainstorming. Jot down things that make sense or work for you, and those are the things that you bring to the show.
Yeah, well, I didn't even get to half of them is what I'm saying. I got 2 pages of stuff here on what the subject started being, and we never even got to it. Now, do you guys remember your id, egos, and super egos? Because we were going to go over those tonight.
Well, egos, hon, I have to tell you, egos are ridiculous because we have no egos, because egos is about fitting in, and we don't fit in anywhere because it's like fitting in, yeah, right, where? So what the heck does it matter? We don't have the capability of having egos because we can feel proud of something we've done, but we don't brag about it. We don't walk around with our head, our nose up our butts. We actually feel good about something we've done that's good, and then we move on to the next thing. So we don't carry egos within us.
Well, I was going Freudian. We were going to be, because the subject initially was denial, and so we were, it was a whole, one of the things you do about that is therapy. Obviously, you know, you can do that for denial, direct therapy, or you can do cognitive behavior programs like 12-step programs or that BIC program that you were talking about, or DBT, dialectic behavior therapy, one that I did. You can do that.
And
you know,
talk to another, just one other person who has TBI. Is a godsend for all of us because I went 5 years before I ever met, and that was online with you guys. Where
I went
ever
17.
That's like me.
Anything that I've been through.
Yeah, me neither. 17 years. I had to write a book to meet somebody else.
You're so lonely, you talk to yourself, in other words.
Well, I mean, I never. That was the conduit. You know, it was 17 years I had never talked to another survivor, and then I decided to write a memoir about my story, about my brain trauma. It got out there around the world. People read it. I got invited as a guest onto an internet radio program, and that's how I discovered internet radio. So, and then it was through futzing around, listening to different kinds of shows on internet radio that I found brain injury radio. But before that, when my book first came out, because there was an endorsement in the front from the Brain Aneurysm Foundation, the only national organization that they have located in, I don't know, somewhere back east, Massachusetts, I think, not
yes,
Boston.
I think
but
you're right.
Yeah, I think it's Massachusetts. although there's a girl who's another survivor who is like a major awesome advocate who's made the Chicago Brain Aneurysm Foundation, I think, almost bigger than the mothership back in Massachusetts. But I did go on their online community, and that was my first time of meeting other survivors, was in the online community on the Brain Aneurysm Foundation. But then when somebody, a couple different places, contacted me that had read my book wanting me to be a guest on internet radio, and that's how I discovered internet radio. I didn't even know it existed.
It's a passion you find for giving back to others that don't understand what you're going, what you've already gone through. The only people that can understand us is someone else who has experienced it. Everybody else has never experienced it, will never be able to relate.
No, but the thing that's relatable from my point of view is that I've been in, I mean, I didn't not only just have a brain injury, but was abused, you know, in abusive situations and had addictive disorders. And so there's a lot of things in common across the board for me when it comes to recovery, because the same principles apply, whether it was an addiction disorder or as a result of domestic or sexual abuse or a brain injury. A lot of the common spiritual principles are the same, you know, different roads to the same place.
They come from our instincts, our heart, and our spirit or our soul. And those are the only things we have when we are born and we learn from. And they are the only things we have when we wake up from our injury and that we can trust. And that's what leads us to what we want.
Or where we're supposed to be, I guess, because I had been working in person with people with addictive disorders for the last almost 25 years, several days a week. So my recovery now slant had been in the area of addictive disorders. And then I spent 3 years locally in a women's shelter situation where I learned the DBT. It was for domestic abuse and sexual assault, a women's center kind of a thing. And now, apparently, I'm being, because of the book and being directed onto the radio, now I'm supposed to use the same skill set that I used in those other places in the TBI community.
Absolutely. That's what's needed, because a lot of survivors are victims of abuse or have had other things that have caused them to have increased emotional distrust and fear. And so calming is so important.
Right. Right. A survivor, I guess. I just am kind of shaking my head in wonder and, you know, really believe that I'm, you know, that I've been directed for a while now, you know, because none of it had really been my idea. I wrote the outline of my book 17 years ago when it happened, mailed it to myself and didn't open it so that it had an informal copyright so I could prove everything that I wrote was back then. And then I threw it in a plastic tub and practiced avoidance and distancing myself from it for 17 years.
Oh, wow.
So I wasn't ready to deal with the brain stuff. Apparently I had to do the addictive stuff for a long time and still continue to do that. I had to drop in and out of the abuse thing over about a 3-year period to learn some things about that. And, apparently we all needed every experience that we've had to be able to bring us to this point, to be ready.
That's for sure.
And was a passion to give back, because I too was in abusive relationships. I too, before my accident, was into drugs and alcohol. So I understand addiction and abuse, and the fear, especially for women, it causes increased levels of fear and distrust of everything around us when we first wake up. And that is an instinct that comes from our insides. We don't understand why, but it's there. So
and then when you
so
get a brain trauma,
giving back because that's where your passion is.
Right. Right. I just found when I got the brain trauma that it shook my confidence, you know, like those other things. You talk about the fear and the mistrust and all of that kind of thing. Well, then the brain injury threw in a different kind of a monkey wrench by totally undermining my confidence, you know.
Well, you don't sound like somebody that has a confidence problem, girlfriend.
Well, it's only because now I just don't deny that I'm being pushed that direction. So I just have to have faith.
You just have to be yourself.
Right. Right. I'm being called upon to figure that out.
Doing a great job because you are helping so many people, and everybody that calls in to TBI Radio, even if they don't call.
Welcome to the Financial Quarterback Podcast. I'm Josh Jelinski, and every week I'm diving into the world of retirement, investing, and financial planning. From understanding market moves to protecting your future, we cover it all. I bring on expert guests and have a little fun with games and real-world insights. With nearly two decades of experience and a Forbes-recognized track record, I'm here to guide you through the biggest questions about your money. Subscribe to the Financial Quarterback Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Jenny Garth from I Do Part 2. Do you know that Future Health can help make weight loss resolutions come true? When it's about biology and not willpower, it's not your fault that the dieting doesn't work. Find out if weight loss meds are right for you in just 3 minutes and for less than $3 a day. Traditional diets don't work because nearly 70% of weight is genetically determined. Through medication, you can work with your body rather than against it to create safe and long-lasting weight loss results. I have a friend who has struggled with weight loss for years. They tried it all. Diet, exercise, it was never enough for them to keep off the weight. Finally, they tried GLP-1s, and now they have been able to keep the weight off. But most importantly, they are feeling good. With Future Health, they make access to qualified doctors that know GLP-1s easier than ever. Find out if weight loss meds are right for you in just 3 minutes at TryFH.com.
TryFH.com.
Future Health is not a healthcare services provider. Meds are prescribed at provider's discretion. Results may vary. Sponsored by Future Health.